Wow, what a week we've had so far. My name is Clay Boykin, and I am in search of the new compassionate male. So far, my producer, Dennis Tardon, and I have had conversations with Ian McKenzie in Canada, Jeremy Solomons in Rwanda, and last night, Orlando Johnson in Florida. Here's Orlando.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. And we're here with the founder of the movement, Clay Boykin.
Hi, Dennis. How you doing? Yeah, we're here and we have the pleasure of having with us Orlando Johnson. And Orlando, you're in Miami. And we've met on Facebook of all places, right?
That's right.
What made you want to reach out? Who reached out to whom?
I reached out to Orlando first, I think, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. He actually beat me to the punch.
I got into a group. Is it Men's Group?
Men's Group on Facebook.
Somehow I got invited into there, and then I saw your posting that you were starting a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it, and I thought, this is good. And see, we're pretty new on our podcast.
Yeah.
And likewise. What I'm doing, you know, I've been on this search. You know, I believe that there's a new compassionate male that's emerging, that with all the downward pressure that's going on, that in our heart of hearts, we know what's true. We know what the right thing is. And that's, mm-hmm. that's starting to come out, and it's coming out in, from my vantage point, as compassion. And, and it seems like a touch point that everybody goes, yeah. And so I'm connecting with as many of the podcasters as I can who are discussing men's issues, who are looking at this from different vantage points, so I can learn. And because I think that this new compassionate male is really emerging as the new archetype.
Yeah.
And so absolutely. When I saw a little bit of what you were doing, and I said, we got to talk.
We got to talk. One of the things that we've been in our search, we're saying that, and especially here in the United States, that was built upon the white male patriarchy. That and as that crumbles, there's going to be all kinds of challenges and shakings that's going on. But what emerges, what can emerge within each of us, men and women, is that new compassionate male that archetype that can fill this void. And so when Clay told me about you, and I was so excited because you could help us to see what your perspectives are and what you're hearing from you. I am 72. Clay is in his mid-60s. You're 60. How old?
Wow, I am 32.
All right, so we see the arc of our of when we've been on the planet, and you can help us to hear what you're hearing.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Well, first off, man, I just want to say thank you guys so much. I'm truly honored to be on your platform. I'm truly humbled as well that you guys would reach out to me and that you're inspired by what I was trying to do. Likewise, I think at the same time when I posted my podcast, I saw yours, and so I was like, oh, this is interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I was speaking with my wife and I was just like, you know, it's a lot of platforms out there that's, you know, trying to empower the woman because of the patriarchal system that has been in place for centuries upon centuries, and, mm-hmm. you know, decades. And now that they're empowering the woman, you know, you kind of find this cosmic imbalance, right? Between the masculine energy and the feminine energy. And so as things try to take a shift in consciousness, right, in which we're all trying to make sense of everything that's happening, you'll see that as we're going through the pendulum swing, right, so we're going from right to left, it's starting to really lean more to the right, versus coming back to balance. So what I thought that I wanted to do was actually give a platform for the men to actually speak. And in doing so, it's not about bashing the women,
right?
It's not about saying that the women aren't beautiful and powerful specimen, because they are, right? We need them. But it's about trying to get the women, or any young man or any older man in that case, to understand that every point in a man's adventure starts with some healing mechanism, right? Yes. So I wanted to open up a platform to where men can come in and they can actually begin the healing process by learning how to open up about their insecurities, open up about, or just be transparent about some of the things that they've been through. And we can just talk about it, right? We can grab a drink, we can grab some water, some whatever you have, some wine, and we can just sit back and have a conversation. And so that's what I'm trying to create. And that way people feel more open and more welcome to talk to me about some of their experiences.
Well, I tell you, I so love what you're saying because I started 8 years ago. I started 8 years ago with a men's circle because, quite frankly, I grew up not trusting other men. Mm. And I'd reached this point where, you know, for me to learn and for me to grow, I was going to have to get over that. And so I started a men's circle and we did it differently. You know, we called it a network and not a group. It's conversations and not discussions. And it's a safe space. It's a safe space for us to gather and not judge one another, not try and fix one another, not call anybody out, but practice connecting head and heart and then learning how to speak from the heart.
Yeah. You know,
learning that vocabulary. And and to do it with other men and realize that we're all on the same level here. We're trying to figure this out. And so it sounds like that's what you're doing on your podcast forum. And I love it. Absolutely.
Awesome, man.
Me too. So what are you learning, Orlando? What's on the minds and in the hearts of the guests that you're getting? What are some of them? Not everything, of course, but just some of the things that have been coming up.
Okay, that's a great question. It's actually two things that I'm learning. The first thing is, so every man has a different definition of what manhood is. One. Every man that I bring on the show, I always ask him the same question. How would you define manhood? And everybody that I've had on my show, I'm not 10 episodes in yet. I'm at about 9 episodes.
God, to meet you now. I'm so glad we met you now. We can say that we met Orlando when in the 10th episode. All right, go.
Oh, man, you guys are great, man. I'm every guy that I've had on so far. And I'm about to actually start inviting women on as well because I want their definition of what manhood should be as well. Mm-hmm. But everyone has given me different definitions of manhood. And I find that very interesting. And the reason why is because, you know, one guy said, oh, man simply means, the body that you're in. And then hood simply means where you reside, which cultivates and shapes your identity as you go through life. Right. And then one man simply says that, you know, it's the embodiment of the all of life. Right, because you wear multiple hats as a man, and so all these different answers are just like, man, this is crazy. So the second thing that I'm learning is culture has truly divided humanity. I hate to say it that way, but it's the truth. And you know, we have to really address it, you know, straight on. You know, we have a black culture, we have a white culture, right? Mm-hmm. And then the black culture, what really shapes the black culture is things such as music, art. You know, acceptance as far as like your style and, you know, you being more black than I am, you know, it's a lot, right? It's truly layered. And so that's kind of where my focus is because my whole idea is I want to take, people of color and I want them to understand that, you know, there's an entire world out there outside of just your culture that you can learn from. And what I want the other culture, if you want to say that, the black and the white side of things, is I want them to understand that the only reason why we misunderstand each other is because of our cultures, how African American people have really taken what America has given them and kind of made it their own, like as far as the music, hip hop, art, R&B music, you know, across the board, right? Same thing with the white Americans as well, right? They have their own culture. And so the disconnect comes in between the two. And so that's what I'm trying to do, right? I'm trying to bring them together to see that men, that a man is a man is a man at the end of the day.
Wow.
Mm. I agree. And the thing that excites me about that, Orlando, is that this is not an either or, but an and gate. One of the things that we were learning, I mean, I grew up in the South, because I'm older than Clay, I actually experienced Jim Crow from the white male privilege side of the of the wall. I saw it, and was there. Clay came along. You came along later than after that, right?
Yes, I just got the kind of the tail end of it. I mean, I saw it. You know, my doctor, our family doctor, great man, had the front entrance, and then in the back he had the colored entrance, and it was labeled that. And I didn't quite understand it, but it, I knew something wasn't quite right. But it
that's was, same here, and I wasn't, and I was not ready to speak up, even though in my head something went. So this was the enculturation that we come in, and then you come in, your understanding. Where did you grow up, Orlando?
So I grew up originally in the South as well. I grew up in Louisiana.
In Louisiana.
In the bayou, yeah.
In the bayou. Now, so did your parents, did they speak of Jim Crow? What was the way that you grew in your own racial identity and understanding about what it was like to be black in the South in when you were growing up?
So that's actually an interesting question, right? So I truly believe that experiences really cultivate the consciousness in the way that you experience life, right? So my mother did a great job of really not, it's not that she did not make me aware of racism, right? She made me aware of it, but she did not allow the negative aspect of my mind to really hone in on that. You know, she made me aware like these are the things that are happening in the world, and this is what you can be in the world. Right. So don't allow this to really shape who you're going to become. So I kind of took that. And what happened was, you know, actually, believe it or not, when I was in school, there was racism. Right. And we were actually about 50-50, half black, half white. But I grew up in the town of Amy, Louisiana. And so it's really like maybe one way in, two ways out, really small. You know, it's not big at all. Right. And we were actually good people, man. There were some good people there. I'm not saying that there were not racist people. We just decided not to be involved with those people. So we just involved with the ones that wanted to be involved with us. And so my home, my growing up was really more balanced, to be honest with you, because I only hung out with friends. I actually played in a marching band. So I had a lot of white friends that I actually hung out with, invited me over to their homes, to their cookouts. And, yep. And it was a good experience for me. Now, on the other end, I also had the negative side as well. You know, I also played baseball, so I also was around more people who really didn't want to hang with black people as much because they saw us as a threat because we were perhaps, I don't know why, you know, we were more athletic, I don't know. But for whatever reason, that did happen. And I would tell my mother about it, and she would always remind me, this is what the world shows you, and this is what you can actually become. You can be the person who links together, just continue to show love. So that's the upbringing that I have. I can't speak for anyone else's experience.
No. Yeah. Well, when testosterone hit that brain and you had to go through that 11, 12 year old and are going, how did that impact you and you defining who you saw yourself as a man? Were you, because you're obviously an intellectual, you've obviously studied and read and done a lot of work. So what was that journey?
So when I was a child, I actually grew up very religious, right? We grew up in a denominational sect called Church of God in Christ, which is basically a spinoff of Baptist, if you will. I think it's a little younger than Baptist. But basically, I grew up very, very religious. And religion kind of really is the foundation of who I am. As I evolved through time, I had this urging thirst to know more about God, right? And a lot of people would say that, oh, you're going to be a preacher or whatever, so on and so forth. So I kind of like just took that and just was like, okay, let's go, right? And so as I went through, you know, my 11 years old, I was growing up into adulthood, I really began to go from this kid who was just kind and nice and people just kind of looked at him as such to this kid who began to become like an oddball, right? Because I kind of just engulfed religion in a sense. And so in doing so, it just made me, I didn't really have a lot of friends. I had people that I was cool with, but I didn't have a lot of friends, but I did have this will to want to know more about God. So I'm gonna try to fast forward and get to the next point. So in doing so, it really drove me to want to know about Christianity, I wanted to know more about religion overall. And so it started there. So I didn't go to seminary, but I did study a lot. I studied some Hebrew. I studied some Greek. I really start delving into what religion actually was, not knowing that it was going to take me to a more deeper spiritual concept. And this story is crazy, but I'll just stop there. If you have more questions, you can ask. But we'll just leave it there and we'll pick up anywhere.
You know, Orlando, I have you now have children, right?
I do.
How are, of course, one of the great phrases that I heard is that was from Robert Fulghum, the guy that wrote Everything You Needed to Learn, You Learned in Kindergarten. And it goes like this. It goes, don't worry that your kids aren't listening to you. Worry that they're always watching you. So how are you, tell me what your experience and what you're learning about your own compassionate male and how you're exemplifying that to your children.
Well, one, I will say this. It has been quite a difficult journey so far. My kids are relatively young. And they're 1 and 3 years old. So they're still,
wow.
My son is about to start. Yeah, I know. He's actually about to start remembering things now. My daughter is just all over the place. She does whatever she wants to do when she wants to do it. But anyway, so this is what I find very difficult. Since I went into that deep spiritual journey, right? I started studying ancient mythology, the ancients, you know, different things like that. It does make it difficult sometimes because I get stuck at times because I want my son to really embody, or my daughter to embody all of what spirituality is. And sometimes I have to kind of hone in on it and realize, listen, I need to start somewhere simple for them and then bring them more into maybe the more complex version of what that is. So what I do in the meantime to give my son the compassionate aspect of what manhood is I love on his mother. And I show them that quite often. At night, you know, before we put them down, we'll have dance sessions. So we'll put on some music and we'll dance in the living room together. And, you know, I'll kiss my wife and then, you know, I'll say, let's give each other hugs. So I'm constantly giving them, the compassion that their mother needs, one. And then I continue to show that compassion to them and then they just see the whole loop effect. You know, and sometimes they'll be in the room playing and they'll just be hugging each other. And my daughter does this little aw thing now that she's getting older for whatever reason. I don't know what she learned it, but she's starting to do that now. I really try to give them that. And my son, he sees me setting up with podcasts. I also travel across the country and I really got into my career, kind of what I do and different things like that. So a lot of times he'll see me, you know, interacting with other people and, you know, he'll ask, you know, he'll be like, daddy, can I talk? Or, you know, oh, daddy's doing this. And so he'll pull out the iPad and he'll see me doing things. And so that's no lie, that quote. They watch everything that you do. That is truly a fact.
Do you see, Orlando, do you see any of the opportunities for the compassionate male for example, in Chicago, when we have so much gang violence, I don't know how it is in Miami. Miami, or how it is, but it, is there room for men to look at each other and grow? Are there places to have this conversation, a place where Clay and I might not be, but you would?
At right now, so yes, in Chicago, there is a space for it. The thing is just, is the space prepared to accept you? That's the question.
Elaborate on that and how we could make it so and help and be part of the solution.
Well, I think this is a start, right? I think that you guys having someone on that of color who's experienced the Black culture and understand, you know, racism does exist. Police brutality is a real thing and we're trying to fix it. It's just like I said, you know, whenever you're trying to go through changes and you're trying to correct things, there's always going to be chaos in the middle of it all. And I think as of right now, what you guys are doing is you're coming on the scene in the midst of chaos, and you're trying to help shape and mold what the beautiful what the beauty could be once you come out on the other side.
You know,
I'm sorry. That's okay. And so the thing about Chicago is, you know, that goes back to that whole culture thing. This is a start, but then they have to be willing to accept. First of all, you know, Black people just want to be accepted as themselves, right? They don't want anyone to have any hidden agendas. You know, that's what they don't like, the hidden agendas. That's what they're looking for. So they immediately come in naturally with the spiritual discernment to try to sense what is this really about, right? Is this about trying to really help build the Black community into, I don't even like saying Black community. I really like to call it the Black consciousness, or people of color in their spirituality, because we're honestly lost right now, and we're trying to get right. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're trying to do, but this is a space. And I think you guys are doing the right thing by trying to have the conversation, by wanting to be involved. This is a good start.
You know, it's interesting that when George Floyd was murdered, it was May 25th, and we had our men's circle that night. We didn't, you know, and it was happening the night we were having our circles. So we didn't know about it. And that night, we're 25 white guys in a circle. I mean, we got, you know, some Black fellows that are there periodically and so forth. But face it, it's a white circle, okay? Mm-hmm. And we're working on our spirituality. We're working on, you know, learning how to be good men. Our topic that night was, you know, what are your aspirations in life? You know, so while we were talking about our aspirations as privileged white males, George Floyd was being murdered. And I woke up to that the next morning. And that's, I believe, where my education started. And we had a dear friend of mine on a few days later, a week later. And he's Black. He happens to be my prayer chaplain. And one thing that came ringing through is, don't ask me what to do. Clay, go do your homework. You know, we've been studying you white people for hundreds of years.
How to negotiate through the white culture. Make sure that you can make sure that we know how to succeed. I've studied you.
Yeah. And I sat there, you know, deer in the headlight, you know, because I asked him in all good faith. I said, what do I do? He said, go do your homework. Don't come to me and ask me. I've studied you, now you study me. Yes. And I tell you what, that was one of the most profound things. And then
me too.
And it was a turning point for our men's circle. I said, we cannot continue on this path as a contemplative circle who were working on our inside without addressing the outside. But I got to keep that sacred container. So we started a separate circle that is getting into racism in America, mm-hmm. and studying it. And what led to that was a fellow tossed me a book, one of my white buddies who I trust deeply. He says, Clay, you need to look at this book. It's called Me and White Supremacy. And byline on it says, combat racism, change the world, and become a good ancestor. Well, he gave me that book, and I tell you what, I flipped out. I says, I'm not a white supremacist. You know, it's not me. I'm a good guy, right? Mm-hmm. And after I calmed down and started looking at it, I started really learning things about white privilege, white fragility, tone policing, you know, white exceptionalism. Oh, I didn't do that.
Yeah,
all that. So these are all things that are coming into my consciousness. It doesn't mean that I'm, you know, consciously
doing it,
but unconsciously doing it.
And it's systemic.
It is.
It's built into the system. It's already built into where we're already. And so it's been such an extraordinary, Clay, you leading this and me being a part of it, to we are working to learn, Orlando. And this is one of the reasons why we wanted so much to have your voice, so that we could listen and learn and ask and laugh and cry and yell and be part of this conversation.
Yeah. I think that the, like I said, the greatest start that you can have is by just having the conversation. That's a start. I think it'll be very difficult for someone to truly understand the ins and outs of being Black in America, simply because you would have to literally go live in the ghettos for you know, the next couple of years of your life and live in an impoverished way to truly understand. And I'm not saying that all people of color are in poverty and poor and different things like that, because that's not all that shapes Black America.
No,
there's obviously intelligent people. But just like that, there are people who are successful and who have marriages and families and they're doing well for themselves. There's always that look over the shoulder, right? There's always that judgment of your color. I live in Miami, Florida, and here in Miami, it's really Latina heavy, right? So you don't really see a lot of people of color out here. They are out here, but they're very small. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, you have the Jews, you have Latinas and different things like that. So it's a very islandy type of place. And people mistake me for Jamaican all the time, but I'm not. I'm like,
so well, do
I'm
you know, man? You can, yeah.
No,
do
like,
you
no,
do
no.
the Jamaica do the Jamaica accent?
No, no, I'm not even close.
Neither is Dennis.
Right. Let me throw it a little bit more. but no, guys, I think that what you're doing here is good, and I think that We hear it, and there are people. Listen, what you have to understand is, in life is duality, right? And duality from both cultures, whether white or Black. In the Black culture, you have the dualistic nature. You have the Black culture who's trying to progress in a little bit more understanding that people are trying to know. And then you have the other side of Black culture that's, I don't give a, mm-hmm. what you're trying mm-hmm. to know, you guys have wronged us. And so what they're doing is they're of just course. Enacting, they're coming from a perspective of hurt people, right? Yeah. So when you have these people who've been wronged for all these years, the first thing that they want to do, instead of trying to reverse engineer the pain and the agony, they're basically going the opposite direction. They say, well, I was pain, so I'm going to cause pain. I want mm-hmm. you to suffer. And so we'll never really move beyond where we come from. We'll just keep enacting it, right? So then eventually the Black people will suppress the white people, and then it'll reverse again, and then the white people suppress. It'll just keep going.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's an uprise of people such as yourselves who are trying to find the compassionate aspect of this. We realize, right, that racism and slavery was wrong, and it should be some amendments for that. And that's what we're trying to do, right? But on the flip side of that, while we're trying to make it right, while we're trying to set righteousness back as spirituality within the world, there's going to be some growing pains. And so we just have to be willing to go through that. Not everything is about brute fist fight, forcefulness and, you know, and different things like that. While there is a time for that, I don't know if you guys have noticed yet, I'm big on balance. That is my driving force.
Well, that's so. Did you study that through Buddhism, or did you have that as an understanding of a Zen perspective of balance?
I did read some Buddhism quotes, some Buddhist quotes. But I think I don't know. I can't really explain. It's just naturally happening.
God, it's beautiful. It really is because I've never seen. I've never seen anything in my life that balance, that it's when you see like any of the gymnasts, like Simone, when she does that, those incredible, everything comes from that center of balance. Every great work comes from a balance. This is one of the reasons why I feel like I'm yearning for us to have the conservative movement back to be principled conservatives. Like Eisenhower or that very much, because we need it. We need a balance. We need balances. We need both sides rather than one or the other.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And I think that, I think that the only way people can begin to embrace Bounty, one, it has to start with healing first. The healing process, you know, you get the cut, it's going to hurt, you're going to cry, you're going to bleed, then you go to the doctor, then you got to have surgery. That's going to hurt too, right? But then after surgery, the healing begins, right? And I think that where we are right now is we're performing surgery. And I think people are beginning to slowly realize that. And my starting my podcast has helped me realize that, that people really just want to heal. They just want to be heard. That's it.
Boy, you hit the nail on the head with that so much.
Yes.
Just want to be heard. I'm doing work on gender equity, and you know, it's the patriarchal system of wounded men and women and all the problems. But if men and women can come together and hear one another and recognize that we're both wounded by the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. I think that plays through for you and me.
Absolutely.
You and I come together, and our commonality is the fact that we're both wounded, and not to compare wounds, you know, and somebody will look and say, well, Clay, you're a privileged white male. You've got everything going for you.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I've got my wounds too. But not to defend myself, but to recognize that pain, we both experience it, however it got there, whatever. And to me, that's common ground that we can both say, okay, let's build something different.
Right. Yeah. And as beautiful as it sounds, and I understand, and I'm sure Dennis, you understand it well. The hard part is, how do we become the bridge between my blackness trying to bridge over to the white community, and then the white community who's trying to be a bridge to build over to the black community? That's what we
exactly
need to get.
And so I want to ask you a question about this, and I want to ask both of you this to be able to see, because one of the things that I'm that I'm trying to understand is that, like, when we have a conversation, or when I meet you for the first time, do I have an opportunity inside my head to assume goodwill? Let's say I turn the corner and I see you. What is my first, am I willing to do the work inside of myself to assume goodwill? Well, because I'm large and because I'm a tall white male, all my life people have given me that break of assuming goodwill about me. That's one of the reasons why I've been successful. Because I've always had that opportunity, because people assume goodwill. Now, are we willing to assume goodwill with one another when you see me coming and I see you coming, and really to work on that internal work that allows us to be in the first place to go to have that as an assumption?
Absolutely. If I may, I think that in order to start, and that's actually a perfect starting point, actually, the perception of a man walking down the street, right? That could be a book title, but I think that in order to fix something like that, it starts with what we see on TV. And you know, because what we're watching on YouTube, what we're watching on Facebook, what we're watching on Twitter, what we're watching, there's so much media outlets out there, right? And the first thing that jumps out is, you know, oh, you see a big black guy. First thing you think is he plays in the NFL, right? Or, you know, you see, a tall white guy. Oh, he's just a nice guy.
Yeah.
Right? Or a guy that may have locks, right? That's coming down the street and he's black. Oh, he's, you know, probably going to rob the store. And I think a lot of that comes from what the media portrays in these movies, right? So when you see a movie, anytime you see a guy with locks in a movie that's black, he's about to fight, or he's about to rob somebody. Well, man, I got locks because I wanted to go on the journey, because I love the patience that's involved with it, because I'm a spiritual person. I'm not a bad black guy because I have locks, right? It's just my preference based on the culture that I grew up in, and I think it's an awesome journey. But unfortunately, because these outlets have created and painted these pictures of like this, it really has shaped the consciousness of mankind. You know, it has really created this tunnel vision from the way that people see or perceive people walking down the street based on their hairstyle, based on the way they look, the way they dress, the way they talk, the way they, yeah, it's just a lot. It's a lot. It definitely is, but it's not impossible. Because if we did it, we can undo it.
And I believe it is possible because you decided to get a podcast to be able to amplify your voice, to be able to get people on to have this conversation. Clay, you decided to do same the thing. Same thing.
Absolutely.
I decided to do the same thing because we believe it's possible. We don't have that's why Clay, talk about why you named this movement the way it is.
Well, golly. Well, the new compassionate male, like I was saying in the very beginning, there's this burn that's happening. All the bad that's going on in the world is pushing down. And I believe that there's this spark inside each one of us of truth. We know what's right. And it's trying to come up. And it's like trying to hold a basketball underwater. Can't do it for very long. It's going to come out. The harder it gets, things are pushing down, it's trying to come out. Now, I don't believe that we men understand what that burn is. And we keep trying to push it down. Oh, that's, you know, that's soft. That's something that's foreign to me. But if we open that up, we let that come up and we embrace that and we can connect in with that, then we become a complete male. And I believe that that's comes out in the form of compassion. You know, John 15:13, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friend.
Yeah,
that's true. You know, how many times, you know, the Marine or the soldier in the foxhole takes care of his brother, you know, without regard for himself. That's the essence of where we begin. Yes, you can learn it, but that's our natural instinct. Somebody next to you starts to fall. What do? You go to pick them up. You go grab them so they don't fall. You don't think about, well, let me think about whether I want to do that or not. No, that's your natural instinct. If we can live in that natural instinct of caring for one another, that's to me what compassion is. And I say new compassionate male. I don't say new compassionate man. Mm-hmm. Man's got some baggage with it. And the male energy, you know, men and women both have it, just like we both have the feminine energy. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about new compassionate male, nobody's excluded from that. Mm. It's within all of us. And there's a compassionate woman too. Compassionate female.
And this is where I love about where you're taking this, Orlando, because what you're, if we have an optimistic point of view, if we believe that there is something that can come up, because it's very easy for us to go down and to take just the negative, just take the salacious, what you see on TV, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, and say that that's going to be what we're going to paint the entire culture to be. It takes more energy to lift it up and to say, wait a minute, there's something deeper coming on. There are some wounds that are asking to be healed. There are some challenges that are asking that is looking like in this acting out. As you've seen with your children, right? I mean, when they're upset, then they're acting out that it's about something deeper than that.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you guys 100%. You know, when my kids were born, thank God I was there both times. And the first thing they did was they cry, right? When my son was born, he cried. When my daughter was born, she cried. And so I really give my son the space to cry, because the first thing you learn as you live through life is big boys don't cry, right? The moment that you establish consciousness, big boys don't cry. And so it starts right there. And so now we're beginning to suppress our feminine nature. And it has nothing to do with, you know, you being too feminine and all that stuff, because that's what goes into the consciousness of man when they start talking about femininity and masculinity. Mm-hmm. The first thing that they want to do is say, oh, that's too girly. That's the first thing you think about, right? But if they took some signs, estrogen and estrogen and testosterone, right? Exists within both, right? Exists within both. And so you have to understand that there is a time and a place to where when I talk to my son, I must act out of my feminine nature and I must love him and try to understand him, right? And vice versa for my daughter. So you guys are spot on, man.
Along the way here, one of the things that I've learned is that in recent years, they've come out and said that when a little boy is born, he actually has more emotion happening than when little girls are born. And so he comes out like this, and what's the first thing that happens? Shut down. You know, you can be happy or mad. All these others. And so we're shut down. And it starts when the little boy gets a blue blanket.
Yep. And you know what's funny, man? That's the funny thing, because when we talk about patriarchal culture, right? I told my wife, I said, you know, when I start this podcast, I'm going to talk a lot about, you know, allowing a safe space for men to speak, right? Not knowing that I would cross paths with you. But you know, in reality, we talk about the patriarchal system and the women say, oh, it's always, everything is for the man. But we never talk about what the patriarchal system has done to the man psychologically.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Amen. Amen.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's the whole point as well of the podcast as well. And I think that as it grows, I'm starting to see that people like this conversation. They like this type of conversation.
Yeah.
They want to know what the man thinks. The man wants to know what the woman thinks, especially as it relates to the dating world. Now, I've been out of the dating game a long time, so I don't know much about what it's like. But I noticed that since I launched the podcast, I gravitate a lot of younger people. And so they definitely want to know, hey, well, I'm a single lady. What is a man that's preparing for marriage look like psychologically? What is he doing with himself? I say, listen, you want to know the truth? Before I got married, I was sleeping on someone's couch, not prepared to marry anyone. And then, lo and behold, I found my wife. So there's really no blueprint to it. It's really a spiritual journey. That's what it's all about. It's a spiritual journey. We come to earth to learn. This is a learning ground. And if we don't learn, I really believe we repeat. And whether we're repeating that on a spiritual aspect or we're just repeating it every day in our everyday life by continuing to perpetuate the same cycles, right?
Thank you.
But it gets very deep. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go off on that.
No, keep going, because that's been my experience is that I have to keep taking a class in Life University until I'm willing to go through that class. You keep marrying the same person, or you keep dating the same person, you keep having the same experience. There's no such thing as a geographical solution. Take my problems with me wherever I go, and I got to go through it and learn.
We're on the cloud, guys. Everything we do is stored in our DNA as memory, and it continues to travel with us just like a cloud on a cell phone or, you know, whatever you have that you store your information on. You know, your body is constantly collecting information, and so that's what we're beginning to see happen with mankind, right? We're beginning to see mankind want to correct all of these errors in the programming. You know, we're trying to find ways to fix it. Like people like yourself and myself, we're trying to be that healing DNA. And so
yes,
I'm on board with that. I'm all about healing.
Yeah. Let me ask a question. When you, what did you do leading up to starting your podcast? What kind of, did you research things? What did you find out there? Or was it just an instinct that said, I need to get a place for men to have a voice?
That's a funny question, man. So as quiet as it's kept, when I was, I was a minister in the pulpit at one point in my life. And that's fine. I don't neglect that part of myself, because it's a part of who I am.
Yeah.
Right. But as I began to progress, I realized that perhaps I have a message, but maybe not in this way. And so I really got turned off a bit behind all of the practices of what being in a pulpit looked like, right? Being in a church, going to church every Sunday, standing up and preaching to people on Sunday. It felt like, and I mean this in the most respectful way, but it almost felt like, you know, I was giving them a little hit, and then, you know, they'll get their fix, and then they'll have to come back for more. But it was really never a full healing. And so that stuck with me for the longest time. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to find a way, because I always felt like you said, it was like an innate thing. Like I felt like I have something to say. I still didn't know what that was, and I'm still figuring it out. Mm-hmm. But I know that there is something that needs to be said. And so as I progress and as I start going through my spiritual journey, and my wife is along with me, and, you know, I said, I think I'm going to start a podcast. And I think I'm just going to speak on my experiences and just let people talk about their experiences. And we're just going to do this together. And my wife thought it was a phenomenal idea.
Yeah.
Because she also know that I have something to say, and she just didn't know how to make it come out. And the podcast came up, and I was like, I think I'm going to do this. I think I'm going to start a podcast. And so I started researching it. If you know anything about me, I don't do anything half-heartedly. I actually, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. Like I'm going to study it. I'm going to know who's the best at doing it. I want to know what they're doing. I want to know how they set theirs up, and I want to do it in excellence. And so that's kind of where it started for me. So it started with religion, then it translated from religion to spirituality, and from spirituality into more balance, into understanding what it is all about. And then from that, okay, now I have something to say. So let's talk.
Yeah. What I appreciate about what you're saying is you have something to say. You're creating the space for people to speak. And I don't hear you say, I have the answer.
I don't.
And that's
that is I'm talking huge. To yeah. But that is huge. That is such maturity, Orlando.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's certainly common ground, because I'm on a search. You know, I don't have if I were to say, okay, here he is, you know, let me teach you this. Mm-mm. No, right. But join me in the search. Let's go figure this out together. Is the statements being made? I really believe there are thousands of men's groups out there, and they different kinds and so forth. And there are thousands of podcasts. And I tell you what, there is a long list of podcasts, men talking about men. And
let me get me started.
Yeah. Now, some of the podcasts I kind of raise my eyebrow at, you know, it's like, they're kind of at a lower level of consciousness and how they're, because they're women bashing and that sort of thing. And that's not what this is about. Right. But I believe that there are thousands of men like you and me out there, and a whole bunch of them have podcasts. And there's a voice, and there's a rhythm of let's ask the question, let's have the conversation, let's don't predetermine the destination, but let's get into action in this way. And I think there's some powerful, powerful change that can happen, because we're all growing together and we're learning together. It's not being foisted upon us.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I love that, man. I love the fact that we share, we're such on the same frequency in so many ways.
I agree.
You know, we're really on a lot of the same frequency. And that was kind of the driving force, because before I started the podcast, I wanted to know if there was a platform out there that actually gave men an opportunity to speak, whether positive or negative. I'm willing to invite a man on and say, listen, I've had 4 divorces in my life, right? And there is no blueprint for marriage. I thought that I had this, and I thought that I had that. And I would let him speak about his experiences. And other people may say, oh, well, he's a dog, or he's this. Because for some reason, the algorithm for the internet, it seems to be mostly negative, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a true algorithm for positivity, and we're trying to create it. We create it amongst ourselves. It would be great if we can have a national place to where this is positivity. Don't get me wrong. There are some positive podcasts out there. But when it comes to isolation, like allowing men to speak, it's either a man typically bashing women, or men bashing men trying to draw more women. Like they in the what you call the younger generation, they call it clout chasing. So what they're trying to do is they're just trying to earn clout from people just so they can get fame. And what the YouTube algorithm is saying that is, you know, you need to have a niche, and you need to find that niche, and you need to carve it out and stick to that. And so that's what they're doing. You know, so if a woman did a podcast about how all men are dogs, and all these hurt women decided to join her. She started a niche, and she just keeps going. Mm. And so, unfortunately, that's what we do, you know?
But what I love about what you're doing, one of the many things, is that we are, because whatever is emerging, it's going to be something that's going to be different, which means that if we can be able to do the kind of math to have the algorithm that will uplift, and by doing that, I feel, is by reaching out to you so that we can have this conversation, then you're reaching out to others who are having it, and we can build something that has some resilience and sustainability, but it has to be something that has to be an evolution in our consciousness. And I have to be willing to come out of it different than when I entered into my conversation with you. I have to be willing and open to be able to do that.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And that's what it's all about. Just being open and willing to accept that there is something much bigger than who you are and where you are in life. And you don't have all the answers, and you're just willing to just embrace the journey and just take in whatever you see, sort through what all the mess is, and accept what it is you need to accept to continue to move on. That's something that I'm learning how to do as well. My wife tells me all the time, you know, she's just like, listen, you know, your message is not one meant for everybody, and it's okay. You know, she's a psychologist, so she's always trying to pick my brain. That's probably why I think the way I think most of the time. But yeah, you know, she says, yeah, she's like, you know, your message is not meant for everybody. And so you can't go into this with the idea that you're gonna save millions of people and everybody's gonna come with that. And then she also reminds me that if your platform grows, there are also gonna come positive and negative aspects with that too. So everything has a positive and negative side to it.
Yeah.
You're seeing that, Clay, on, you know, as he's continued. Clay, I admire you so much because of your willingness to stand up for both for the movement, but every single time I see you, you always start with, okay, how can I actually live the change that I'm asking other people to walk? Yeah. It's just so inspiring in what you're doing.
You know, I spent so many years in the corporate world, and you know, I was one person on the outside and a totally different person on the inside. And, you know, it took me down. You know, it literally almost killed me. And after that event, you know, I started searching and say, I got to figure this out, you know, and go through my dark night of the soul. And like I said earlier, I figured out, oh, there's work that we men have got to do with one another, you know. Yeah. And that's, if we can create that, that's what I need. So that's what I created. So
I mean, we were part of the patriarchy. We were the largest part of the patriarchy. We've got to be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. It's not an abdication. There's not some other abdication. We've got to roll up our sleeves and say, okay, look.
And we've got to get over this notion that, oh, you know, to balance things out and reparation and so forth. Oh, you know, I'm a white guy. That means you're going to take it out of my pocket. No, that's not the thinking.
What can we do to change the system and make sure that it's more of a balance? I mean, I used the analogy of like the NFL. How can we make sure that the playing field is level so that the same chances that I had, every child gets the same kinds of opportunity. Then what they do with it is up to them. But they get the playing field is basically level.
Right. No, I agree. And I would say, to answer that question, I would say that it would start with having this conversation. One, hey, we realize that there's been some discrepancies and some imbalances throughout life. Boom, first start. Second start, what can we do to help it? One, we can offer more loans and more business opportunities for the African-American people so that they can then create revenue and wealth for their families, and they can embed down the generation of time. Now, that's on one side. On the other side, what can we do as African-American people? we can try to continue to educate ourselves on what it takes to become wealthy, understand how to use finances, how to balance finances, so that as we learn and as we grow, when we go to these banks, instead of them looking at us as a black man and as a threat, now you can see us as an educated human being, not as a black or a white person, but an educated human being. Yeah. And what type of loan can we apply for you today? Black people have to begin to learn about credit, how credit works in society. So, you know, I think on both sides, we have work to do, right? So one side says, we realize what we've done. How can we help you? The other side is, well, you can give us more opportunities to understand wealth and social issues. Okay, so then since you're doing that for us, we're going to continue to educate ourselves on how to use these things, and so that we can apply them to our lives, so when we go to the banks, we can get loans without being judged by the color of our skin. And so I think, like you say, in it, you
what
also
a beautiful example. That is mm-hmm. that it's exactly what I believe, because our opportunities are, because it's not a zero-sum game. It's not that if I give something,
that's the point.
It gets bigger. The pie grows.
That's the point.
So that's the reason for diversity. I don't know if either one mm-hmm. of you have seen a field that where you only put one culture, one plant in that field. After a few years, what happens? What there happens to that soil?
Yield goes down. Yeah. The soil's beat. Yeah.
But
yeah.
what happens if yeah. you plant diversity in that same field? You plant all different kinds of plants and put different animals. And what happens to that field?
It flourishes.
And regenerate. Yeah. And we humans are exactly the same thing.
Yeah, you're right. But it's, like I said, guys, it's one of those things where we get it. It's mm-hmm. all a conscious thing, right? It's, you know, some people are just, they're just not there yet. And you know, in my lifetime, we may not see it, but this starts the process, though.
Thank you. Absolutely. This is watering.
This is putting the seed in the ground right here. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Orlando, that is.
There's a saying in the Bible where, you know, one man planteth, another man watereth, but only God can give the increase. So there are some things that we have to begin to look at as not in linear time, but we have to say that time is such a huge continuum that what mm-hmm. we're doing now is all a part of it, not just the end of it. So this is starting it. And, you know, over time, it's like medicine, right? One doctor comes in, they discover it, and they pass away, but they pass on their information and another doctor adds to it. And I think that's what's going to have to happen. And it may not be in this lifetime. I'm willing to accept that.
What is it, the man that plants the seed for the tree that he'll never sit in the shade of?
Or builds or lays the bricks in the cathedral that they'll never see the completion of it. That's not the point. The point is my hand in yours, Orlando, my hand in yours, Clay. Yeah. And we're doing this together, that we're doing this. We're learning. We're laying the foundation so that generations to come will have these opportunities. And we're willing to do the hard work today.
Absolutely, guys. You guys are doing it. It's no more willing. You guys are doing it.
Orlando, thank you so much for the time today. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bless your heart, Clay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And bless your heart. And bless my heart, too. Goodness gracious. Let's go. Let's go forth and see you next time.
I am so glad that you could be with us in search of the new compassionate male. I'm Clay Boykin. See you next time.